Desai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram. It is 9:35 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is the 17th of August 2017 and you are tuned to Asia Stream on Radio Sai. We are coming to you live from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Current weather conditions in the abode of supreme peace are so very easy, breezy, pleasant and pleasing because last night we had rains for a few hours and this morning the Divine Valley woke up looking fresh, clean and green. The gentle and cool breeze this morning was refreshing to say the least. General outlook for the day, a mix of sun and clouds. Chance of precipitation is at 23% and humidity at 54. Minimum temperature 24, maximum 32 degrees Celsius. With Humidex, it may feel a bit warmer later in the day. Sai Ram, good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, your all-day live connection to Prashanthi Nilayam, the divine abode of the Purna Avatar, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. My name is Karuna and I'd like to begin by offering myself at his lotus feet, my very own Sai Krishna. Dear listeners, I simply cannot begin to tell you how happy I am to have this opportunity, courtesy our big boss here at Radio Sai, Bhagwan Baba, to be able to connect with all of you, the blessed listeners of his very own divine radio station. I have been away from Morning Glory and Thursday Live for over a month and it feels great to be able to come to the studio and serve you your Thursday morning dose of vitamin G, where G of course stands for God. Thank you for your company, all you aspiring souls who are yoked to the glory of Lord Sai emanating from the Divine Valley. And I also cannot let this moment pass without first thanking my colleague, Brother Raghuram Bhatt, who gladly filled in for me during my absence. Thank you, Brother Raghu, for your support and willingness to step in. You are our versatile hero always, and you do it all. You play Uncle Lion, you do voiceovers, script write, anchor programs, and you even skydive. Wow, Raghu, may Swami always bless you with such zest for life. Meanwhile, dear listeners, here's what I have lined up for you this morning. A mega dose of vitamin G in the form of two inspiration-laden interviews. Firstly, we will conclude the analytical and candid and so well-articulated conversation with Dr. Soumya Panchanathan of the United States. Last week, you heard part one right here. Today, I will play the conclusion. It's a much shorter file. And this is a must-not-miss conclusion of a very fine interview. Following this, I'm honored to debut part one of another insanely inspiring episode of Tris with Divinity. Personally, I loved recording every moment of it. My guests are a husband and wife team from the United States of America, Sister Sarojini and Brother Shyam Kanagala. Dear listeners, I urge you to download all three parts of this interview and listen and re-listen at your leisure as this honest, humble and gentle couple share both the heights of ecstasy and the pits of agony that their journey in life has led them to experience. And as they analyze it in hindsight in the light of Swami's teachings, they share many a lessons that could guide each one of us in our own journeys. So, coming up at the bottom of the hour, part one of Tris with Divinity with Mrs. Sarojini and Mr. Shyam Kanagala. But up first, the conclusion of my two-part conversation with Dr. Soumya Panchanathan. Here it is for your listening pleasure and inspiration. And by the way, I've also lined up a bhajan requested by our Radio Sai listener, Divya Trivedi, at the conclusion of today's show. Divya is one of our most productive and helpful volunteers at Team Radio Sai, and her wish is our command. So that will be the last presentation on Morning Glory. But first things first, conclusion, Tryst with Divinity with Dr. Soumya Panchanathan from America. And come to think of it, voices from the US of A are all over Morning Glory today, clearly as per the will of the Lord. Here it goes.
There's another exercise I would like to share that we do with our group for kids.
Please.
We have one of them blindfolded. We've created a path that meanders. And three of the other students, we assign one to be the voice of God. The person doesn't know which one is the voice of God. And the other two are supposed to be other voices. And they should try and get the student off the path. And their exercise is to walk the path and try and figure out which one is the voice of God.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And we use that exercise to point out that sometimes it's very difficult to know which is the voice of God. So how else can you look at all the competing voices in your head and say which one is the voice of God? So these kinds of exercises and subsequent discussions can help to make these lessons concrete. And then they start to listen to their voice of the conscience.
So what determines the voice of God?
Even in real life?
No, in this game.
In this game, it's just a game. They're supposed to tell what they'll say is something like, I had seen the overall path and I knew that if I went left it wouldn't be correct, or something like that. Or they said, I thought this person's voice was calmer. Mm-hmm. Or they might say, I thought you would have chosen this person to be God. Or,
okay.
You know, but it's a game.
Uh-huh.
The point is, it's in real life, that's what we talk about, is that it should always be aligned with Swami's teachings, and it should make you a better person. As long as what you are doing is making you a better person, any difficulty you're going through is challenging you to become more patient, is challenging you to become more kind, is challenging you to become more disciplined, then take those challenges. As soon as you find that you are actually finding it so difficult that you are becoming crankier, you are becoming more angry, remove yourself from that situation temporarily. And then go back to it. If it is meant to be part of your life, you have to go back to it. But you remove yourself so that you can listen to Swami's voice again and get more ideas.
Very nice. Very practical suggestion. Good advice. Thank you. Soumya, you have such a stellar resume. You are the Associate Program Director at the Phoenix Children's Hospital Pediatric Residency Program. You're also the Team Director of Biomedical Informatics at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. How much of Swami do you take to work?
If you mean his name and his form, no. But
his teachings?
His teachings every day. Every day. When I teach, it's interesting. When I teach the pediatric residents and the medical students, I tell Swami, I will teach the topic, but you have to give the clinical experience or some experience that will make that topic stick.
Okay.
And it has happened again and again. To the extent that I tell all my residents and students, I have an arrangement with the universe. I will tell you something and you will go and have an experience. So that has happened many times.
You mean a patient case comes that matches what you've just taught them?
Yes, exactly.
So they get a practical learning?
They get a practical learning immediately after. Or they get a question on a test. Or a question on a practice test that will say, I knew the answer because of what you had said that day. So that is one thing. As well, a lot of outpatient pediatrics is prevention. A lot of outpatient pediatrics is teaching. Teaching parents how to be good parents. And that is completely Swami's teachings. When I have students who aren't doing well at school, that is, patients who are not doing well at school, and they are being considered questioning whether there is attention deficit, one of the first things I tell them is to actually practice silent sitting. I don't call it meditation, but I ask them to start with 15 seconds and work their way up and do silent sitting as a method of building up that ability to sit quietly. Even discipline, the way I teach about discipline is entirely from Swami's, that it has to be about teaching, not punishment. And when I teach the families, I teach the pediatric residents how to teach the families as well. Mm-hmm. And so all of that is Swami's teaching. Living a good lifestyle, diet, activity, exercise, treating your body with respect. All of those things are Swami's teachings. So I don't see that there's not a minute in my day when Swami is not there guiding what I'm saying to any person. Even when I'm teaching a full class in a lecture type, the idea is you want to get the students to understand that it's all about serving the patients. Even when I'm doing biomedical informatics.
What's that about?
Biomedical informatics is the use of data and information, visualizing the data in such a way that it gives you a better way to serve the patient.
I see.
Decision support, how to use all of these tools that we now have in a way that supports you being good with the patient. And the thing is, it's very technical. So it seems at odds with humanism, care and compassion. Mm-hmm. But the idea is, let the computer do what the computer does best, so that you are free to do what a human does best with another human, to give care and compassion, to understand what this illness means for that person individually, not as a group, not every patient with this disease, but that patient. So you are freed to do that for the patients. And you want to give the best quality care. So informatics is also at the base of quality improvement, patient safety. So all of that is about Swami's teaching of excellence. And so you have to inspire excellence in those you teach. So even though I see patients primarily, most of my patient care is done through my students and residents. And I'm a taskmaster. I want them to think more broadly, to think more about the specifics of that particular patient.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you prescribe silent sitting as an antidote to ADHD and, you know, behavioral disorders. Does it work in your experience?
So I actually find that that works as a good adjunct to the behavioral therapy. A lot of my current patients have a lot of other aspects of their life that is chaotic. And so I have experienced that in another context where I found it really works. The other context is I used to give classes in a school for homeless children. So these children were not familyless, but they did not have a set place to live every day. Each couple of days they would be moving around. So the school was set up for these children in such a way that they were not stigmatized if they couldn't have a shower. They were picked up from their new location, and they didn't have to change schools because they lived in a new school district. At that time, when I used to teach there, I used to give something the equivalent of education in human values kind of class. And at that time, I would do silent sitting. And we started with just a very short silent sitting. It was amazing that these students, who were so all over the place, when silent sitting started, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, they could sit. And they relished the silence. And they would actually beg me to do longer. And I think it was such a unique experience for them that silence was so wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I can say it works. And I think it needs to be used more consistently at home by parents who really are committed to that. Sometimes it is easier for a parent to give a medicine than it is easier for a doctor sometimes to give a medicine. So from both sides, you need commitment to working with the child at home in order that we really decrease the amount of children who are prescribed the medications. Mm-hmm. I won't say that it does not exist, attention problems, that no child will benefit from a medicine. But there's a huge number that will benefit from a structured lifestyle and silent sitting on a regular basis that can do without medicine and instead have that.
Mm-hmm. You also spoke about advising parents on how to manage their children, mm-hmm. and giving them what I'm assuming are parenting tips based on the kind of teachings that Baba has taught us, more interaction, more time with children, mm-hmm. responsible parenting. Mm-hmm. How do the American parents receive such advice?
Very well. Very well. I think that there is no difference. Having grown up there and having lived all my life in the West, I really find that parents are parents all the world around. They want what's best for their children. They may have different views on what is best, but I think the natural instinct is to want to make your child happy. And where I point out is that your job is not to make them happy today. Your job is to make them happy long term. And therefore, you have to do certain things that may make them not happy in the short term. And the methods that I choose are not harsh, and they're very consistent. I really focus on consistency. I focus on choosing the battles that are appropriate for the developmental age. So in a one-year-old or an 18-month-old, you don't try and discipline. You keep them safe. You ignore tantrums because you show them that tantrums don't work. That's not how they're going to get what they want. And you hold their hands when they start to hit. Those simple things. And slowly but surely they will learn. You do those consistently, without anger, consistently as a teaching. As they get older, you start making them responsible for small decisions. Do you want to wear this or do you want to wear this? And when...
Or do you want broccoli or cereal for breakfast?
Correct. And once they have... But the thing key there is, once they have made a decision, mm-hmm. you make them stick with it. So if they picked toast instead of cereal, they don't get cereal until they have finished their toast. Mm-hmm. And then they learn the concept that if they make a decision, they have to stick with it. And they face the consequences of small decisions. if they make a decision to wear a certain piece of clothing within the constructs of what you consider acceptable, and that particular day somebody teases them that they're wearing something that's not in fashion or whatever.
Not at all cool.
Then they will wear that for that day, and then the next day they can choose differently. So that you give them small choices within the bounds of what is age appropriate.
Speaking of age appropriateness, our own children growing up in the West and everywhere else, I think in urban India it's not any different. The Sai children, the Sai young adults, they somehow tone between popular culture, which is so based on body consciousness and body image, and the Sai teachings that we bring to them in the SSC classroom or the Bal Vikas program based on higher aspirations. So somehow it is a very difficult time for them to sort of integrate the two and find the right balance. What is your advice to them directly, never mind the parents?
So I will draw on my own experience as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a point when I told Swami, why couldn't you have come into my life later so that I could have my fun as a teenager and then have those higher aspirations. So I'm speaking from that place. What I try and do is I use popular culture in the service of Swami. There are many songs that if you think about Swami in the song,
it looks like
it's a love song to Swami.
Exactly.
It's a love song to Swami.
Yes.
It is a song of hope from Swami.
And of that perfect love, which you are not going to find around so easily.
So in fact, what I have found my SSC students doing is they will themselves find these songs and they'll say, Auntie, this is a good song for us to practice for the next program. So I actually have encouraged them to use both popular cultures in the service of Swami's teachings. There's a lot of songs about peace. There's a lot of songs about charity, generosity, giving. A lot of the kindergarten songs are about loving and sharing and friendship. So use the popular culture of the country that you are in. And this is another way in which you bring the popular culture
and diversity
into that. The stories also should be stories that they're familiar.
Yeah,
and in fact, I'm an SSC Group 4 teacher. We use social media. Find me inspiring stories that you have found on social media. And one of my students routinely posts inspiring stories from this place where they are trying to seek Swami everywhere they see. So I don't find it's not meant to be a dichotomy. I also tell them that if you have a talent for art, you have a great responsibility, because art is like a megaphone. Whatever you are feeling, others will feel through your art, whether it is song, whether it is dance, whether it is drawing, whether it's drama. You must have a responsibility that only your purest sentiments should enter that megaphone. And so that's how I try to inspire them to seek out those cultural aspects that will serve Swami's teachings.
And Samya, after the Mahasannidhi of Bhagwan Baba, you have continued your bond with Prashanthi Nilayam. Of course, your parents were here and your mother continues to serve here.
Mm-hmm.
But that apart, you have continued your visits to Parthi and attendance of Bhajan and Darshan. What keeps bringing you back?
It is definitely a recharging place. And in fact, this time I have been absent for a long time. I think I came last in February of 2016, and events have prevented me from coming since then, and that has been too long for me.
A year and a few months.
Hmm. So I do find I recharge. But even the center, I find that if I miss Thursday bhajan or Sunday bhajan, I feel like I have missed lunch or dinner. It is necessary for me.
The spiritual calories.
Yes, it is necessary for me.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So as a professional, a doctor and a tea professor and a parent yourself, how do you guide young people to make good choices, lifestyle choices, in an environment where there is such a bombardment of influences from the media of what is cool, what is hip, what is right, what is fashionable, and what is not?
I think one of the first things is when you are following Swami's teachings and you are joyful. See, I think a lot of times people feel that spirituality is very dry. It makes you serious.
And boring.
Yeah. So when you bring spirituality to fun stuff, games, exercising, sports, music, and just generally you live a wholesome life, all centered around Swami, but it is not boring, then I think people look at it differently. I think that's what I think inspires youngsters, is when you are youthful in your attitudes, when you are not serious. Swami himself asked us to take spirituality seriously, but not to be serious.
And there's a subtle difference.
There is a subtle difference. Because in fact, I find that when you take spirituality seriously, you are so joyful from the tips of your toes up to the top of your head.
Hmm.
It's a joyfulness and an enjoyment of life that rubs off on everybody around you.
Mm-hmm. And Samya, after the Mahasanidhi of Bhagwan Baba, a lot of people were left confused and lost and didn't know how to manage their relationship or sustain it with him without the form. How have you coped?
So I think having lived in the West, and we spent most of our time with the omnipresent Swami. So for us, it has actually been a slightly easier transition, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I have noticed is that when Swami was here in the physical form, the SSE teachings that we did focused more on his teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we connected it as carefully, as intentionally to Swami the person. Now I am a lot more intentional about that.
Could you explain how?
In the sense that I have started to tell Swami stories illustrating some of the points that I talk about his attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
Telling that through Swami stories, or that way they can connect to how Swami was an example of so many of these teachings. And I feel that we have to make a much greater effort to ensure this heart-to-heart connection between the SSE children and Swami. Because I think the teachings are so universal that they connect very easily to the teachings. And if Swami wills that that is all what those children need, and that is all they need, that is okay. But I feel that there's a sweetness in the connection with Swami that I am becoming more intentional about, so that they can understand that Swami did this and Swami did that, and this is how he showed us that this is the way to live. And this is why I was so inspired by him, so that I can give at least a little bit to them of what I got. Mm-hmm. I think that he has given all of us, and specifically he has given me so much, that I feel that the only way I can repay him is by living my life every minute for him, doing things that he would want, and doing, sharing what he has given me with others.
Very well said. Swami, in light of the fact that there has been this very unfortunate drama that has taken place after Mahasannidhi, where some people are masquerading as mediums of Swami and trying to collect money, something that has never ever happened during the entire lifetime of Bhagwan Baba, in the names of this new factions that are trying to put up some institutions. How do you guide people? How do you point them to the truth as you see it? Because you are an influencer.
Right. Right.
In your Sai center, in your Sai organization.
Swami has always told me that there is nobody between me and him. And so I feel that that is my answer, is that there's never a need to have a conduit to Swami. I prefer not to... I feel I cannot speak to the fact that I don't know. Maybe Swami did tell other people to do this or that. So I don't make a judgment on that. But I feel that my main lodestone, my main central aspect of what I believe, is that we never need a via media between me and Swami. We never need any intermediary. He has told that many times. And the other thing he has told us is we do not need to collect money. So those two aspects, I do not feel that I need to go anywhere or do anything different than what I'm doing now.
Thank you. It's been a great honor and very interesting to hear your thoughts. Thank you for joining me on this show. I appreciate your presence.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to share Swami's leelas.
Truly. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners.
Radha.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, I beg your pardon for all the little technical glitches I'm experiencing. I guess I've been away from the job and I've become rusty. So I'm not being careful with the files that just play on their own. Apologize for that. Allow me to welcome you back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. And as you may have guessed, we're coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the seat of supreme truth, auspiciousness and ultimate beauty. Today is the 17th of August 2017 and the exact time in the ashram right now is 8 minutes past 10 a.m. That is Indian Standard Time. You just heard the conclusion of Trisway Divinity, a two-part interview with Dr. Soumya Panchanathan of the United States of America. So, dear sisters and brothers, what are your thoughts, suggestions and feedback regarding this conversation? We'd love to hear back from you. Please email us at listener@radiosai.org. Now, since time is of essence today and I have a number of files to play, I'm going to go ahead and play my next file, which is part one of a brand new episode of Trisway Divinity. Radio Sai is pleased to debut this exclusive interview with Mrs. Sarojini and Mr. Shyam Kanagala, followed by a bhajan that has been requested by our very own listener and our very own Radio Sai volunteer, Ms. Divya Trivedi. But first, there's an important announcement regarding the Sri Satya Sai archive. And I have also saved one about the karaoke program that we have started, which has become a super hit with lovers of music, bhajan music everywhere. So please, I urge you to stay with Morning Glory and with Thursday Live for the rest of your day. And I hope to meet you right here next Thursday. And in the meanwhile, don't forget, I will be waiting eagerly for your feedback to both the interviews on Morning Glory today, including the one that is about to follow with Mr. and Mrs. Kanagala. So please enjoy this amazing interview and do me a favor, will you please? Have a sizable, awesome day ahead. And that starts by pulling out that smile from wherever you have hidden it, in your drawer, in your cupboard, in your pocket, in your safety deposit box, wherever it is. Pull it out and wear it joyfully. We just heard Dr. Soumya tell us about spirituality being joyful. So everything follows a joyful smile. And I assure you that your day will flow wonderfully ahead. With that, I want to just say Jai Saram to you and line up the wonderful files that I have put in place. And the reason I'm trying to sort of rush a bit is because I don't want to take up too much time past 11 a.m. because my colleague Brother Prem is ready with a wonderful program, The Answering Booth, and sometimes I cannot control the duration of the files, so I've begged his indulgence to go slightly over, but not too much. Thank you for your understanding, and I look forward to connecting with you again next week, and in the meanwhile, keep those emails coming, okay? I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you, and have a wonderful day ahead.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Here is an important announcement. Shri Satya Sai Archives is a state-of-the-art facility built with the objective of preserving the precious messages of Bhagwan Baba for posterity. These are audio recordings such as audio tapes, spools, cassettes and gramophone records, video recordings such as VHS, SVHS, Hi8, Mini DV and HDV tapes, Betacam, DVCam, Big and Small, DigiBeta, including 16mm and 8mm films. Also images, photos and negatives, color and black and white, and manuscripts, letters, articles, poems, songs, etc., all written exclusively by Bhagwan Baba. Currently, we have a very impressive collection of the above. Many of them have been donated by devotees. Before preserving these items in the custom-designed vaults in the archival building, they have been digitized. This facilitates content access in electronic form and helps in spreading the message of Swami. Very few organizations in India and abroad are able to undertake this digitization work, as the necessary technology and equipment needed are no more available. With difficulty, few organizations have been identified who are willing to undertake this digitization work. This digitization work has been entrusted to Radio Sai Division. It is possible that many devotees may have in their personal possession some or all of the above items. This is to appeal to such persons to provide access to such assets for us to digitize the same. If they so desire, we could also retain them for long-term preservation with due acknowledgement process being followed. Kindly get in touch with the following for further clarification and details. Professor Sudhir Bhaskar, Director, Radio Sai Division, Sri K. Chakravarti, Member Secretary, Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. Thank you and Sai Ram. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Tris with Divinity. Today we are honored to have with us a couple from Dallas, Texas in the United States whose names have become synonymous with Sai Seva activities. Sarojini and Shyam Kanagala are lifelong Sai devotees who have lived their lives in the light of Bhagwan Baba's teachings. Sarojini holds a master's degree in English literature from Nagarjuna University, and she is also a certified Montessori teacher. She has extensive experience in teaching Sai spiritual education, and she has penned articles and co-authored a book with her husband on Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. This humble and dedicated lady is the daughter of an illustrious father who is well known in Sai circles as the translator of Bhagwan Baba's divine discourses, namely the much-loved Professor Anil Kumar. Sarojini's husband, Shyam Kanagala, has an impressive resume with a Master's in Aeronautical Engineering from IIT Madras, a Master's in Helicopter Engineering from ENSICA, Toulouse, France, and a third Master's in Computer Science from the Texas A&M University, which he earned after he moved to the United States. Currently, Mr. Shyam Kanagala works in the area of information technology. But the part of his resume that he considers most important is his experience as a Seva Dal volunteer of the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, and he has had this privilege to serve as a Seva Dal both in Chennai and Bangalore in India. Over the decades, the couple have kept up their dedication to the Sai mission in the United States and have served the Sai mission in various office bearers positions and as SSC gurus and Sai Sevaks. For the 90th birthday of Bhagwan Baba, they published a book that they have jointly authored, Faith, Hope and Love, A Personal Journey from I to I, from the little I to the capital I. On that faithful, hopeful and loving note, I welcome Mr. and Mrs. Kanagala to Trisvi Divinity. Sairam Sister Sarojini and Sairam Brother Shyam, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you, Karanaji. Thanks for having us here.
It's a pleasure. This is a long overdue interview, and I hope with Swami's grace and his blessings and his presence here, we can do justice to the love that you want to share with our listeners. Mm-hmm. So let's begin at the beginning. Sister Sarojini, how did your journey with Swami begin?
Actually, in the year 1972, due to my mother's illness, we visited Puttaparthi, and as many of you are already aware, my father came from a Brahma Samaj missionary background, and my mother is from an Orthodox Hindu background. And so when she fell ill, they have consulted
me. What was the nature of her illness?
She had a hysterectomy, okay. And after that she had some complications.
I see.
And they have visited many doctors to no avail. And she wanted to go to temples and just get some peace of mind. And my father was forced to take her to many places of worship. And during one of those visits, they happened to hear bhajans from a nearby place. And they ended up...
Where was this?
It was in our hometown, Guntur.
Guntur, okay.
In Andhra Pradesh. So finally, they visited this Satya Sai Seva Samiti or Sai Center. And my mother really enjoyed those bhajans. And she felt that healing from within with the vibrations around. Mm. And she wanted to go and see Swami.
Mm-hmm.
So my father agreed to take her, and all four of us, myself and my three of my siblings and my grandmother, we all visited Puttaparthi, and those
what
were
do you
days.
Remember? You must have been very little.
Yeah, I was around six or so. Yeah. So and my youngest sister is 1 year old, and all we were looking forward to is to, you know, go on a trip with my mother and my father. But for my mother, it's a different experience. And after we reached Puttaparthi, the vibrations, the energy, and the ambience, it is just took us to a different dimension. And my mother started to connect with Swami. And he didn't talk or anything like that, but his love and the light that surrounded him was really magical. And we've not seen Lord Rama or Krishna, and this is the first time we have seen someone divine in human form. And as soon as Bhagwan walked on those sands, he would leave those footprints, and we would go and collect that sand, and as children we would go and touch and feel all those stones there. There were a few people, not many, few hundreds maybe. And we waited for a couple of weeks, and Swami did not talk to us or anything like that. But when we came back to our native town, my mother was totally transformed. She had recovered from her illness. She was unable to take care of us at home, just four of us. But after she returned, she was a different person. She was able to cook for hundreds. And several other women joined her. She became an inspiration to many in our community, and they started serving the homeless So, and they've involved us from our childhood.
Hmm.
And seeing this great transformation in my mother, my father took interest in reading Swami's messages and teachings, and slowly he also joined in this I organization. And Bhagawan did not talk to us for 7 long years. We would go and come back and visit him for Dasara and for birthday. But after 7 years, I think that was the testing period for us. And after 7 years, one day, Swami addressed my father as Guntur professor. "Come, I want to see you," he said. That's the first time ever he spoke to my father. And he asked him to bring all of us to for Dasara celebration. And then he gave an opportunity for my father to speak for the first time. And he didn't really see us physically. He sent prasadam and sari and blouse and haldi, kumkum, everything for my mother. So we were all like astonished. This is for the children, this is for the wife and everything. It was all very detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's touched our hearts and he stole our hearts by his love and grace. So that was the first time I've come to Swami.
What a beautiful experience. And I like it very much so, because it doesn't have that factor that we came in and Swami called us for an interview.
No.
And, you know, it began with the materialization of something. It is about that the connection that started at a deeper level.
Yes.
And I've always noticed for relationships that sustain or survive the test of time, that inner connection is very important. And you all began on that wonderful note.
Yeah, we came during our difficulties.
Yes.
And
also the connection was inner, right? He didn't walk in and just say, okay, wave his hand and say, "Everybody inside, let's have a good time in the interview room." That didn't happen. So
no.
This is phenomenal that it happened at that time at a deeper inner level. And I guess that explains the deep and long-lasting relationship that you all have with him. So turning to Brother Shyam. Brother Shyam, what was your background?
Where did you grow up
and how did you come to Bhagwan?
Yeah, my father served in the Indian Navy,
mm-hmm.
so we would get transferred from city to city quite often. And actually, our it's all divine timing. Way back when Swami was in his teens, like about 18, 19, he visited Chennai, then known as Madras. And my mother was a young girl of about 10 or so, and she happened to have his darshan back then. Swami was, at an outer level, he was very shy, and he would, when he would sit on his chair, he would keep his head down, especially when women would come and take namaskar, he would not look up. So, my mother went, and she was a young girl, and she took pada namaskar. But, nothing else happened at that time outwardly. And then later when my mother, when she was a little older in her youth, she heard many stories about Swami. But, to her mind, they appeared a bit far-fetched,
mm-hmm.
because they were all about Swami's leelas, astounding miracles, raising mm-hmm. people from the dead. And so she was not sure whether it was there was a lot of exaggeration along with the reality. And so she appreciated it, but she was not too sure.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe then our time had not yet come. So that was probably her reaction. But later on in life, when my father was posted in Hyderabad and we were in a hostel in the Kendriya Vidyalaya in Chennai, we went home and suddenly we saw Swami's pictures in our house, and they were doing bhajans and everything. And we asked what happened, and we were okay. We were children and we joined the bhajans. We didn't have any question about that, but we wanted to know how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then my mother narrated that there was a time just prior to that when in my father's work, somebody who was dismissed from his job because of some other reasons, he thought that my father was responsible for him losing his job, and he filed false allegations against my father, and it became a military court case. So it was tried, and my father, of course, came out. He was acquitted. They found that there was no wrongdoing on his part at all.
Mm. But a very tough time.
As middle-class people, we value our integrity and our name and community and all that. For us, it's very important. And he was deeply impacted by that. And at that time, when they were hurting, somebody told them about Swami again. And then this time, quite spontaneously, without any prior thinking, they just came to Puttaparthi for Shivaratri. It was around Shivratri time.
What year might that have been?
It was 74. And actually, that's very important. I believe in that year, Swami had mentioned that those who see the Lingodbhava during that time, they'll have no more birth. There's no rebirth for them. And my father, my mother, and my grandmother were the three people who came. And one of them saw that. My father definitely saw that. And my mother, she used to keep a fast through the night. She would, the 24 hours on Shivratri, she would not even take a drop of water. So I'm not so sure whether she had the chance to see the Lingodbhavam, because she may have just been resting. But basically they came at that time. Then when they came back, then they were doing these bhajans and everything. And of course, by that time already the problem had been solved also. But, you know, that Swami just used that as an excuse to enter our lives. And then we went and we said bhajans and all. And then later my father got transferred to Chennai, Madras. And the real turning point in our relationship with him came one afternoon. On a Sunday afternoon, my father went to visit with a friend of his. And as they were just talking casually, this friend's sister was in a neighboring room. And she was, I believe, knitting a sweater. And the doorway was open between that room and where they were sitting. And suddenly she looked at my father and said, Mr. Satyanarayana, don't move. And my father was a little stunned by that call, you know, because they were just having a casual conversation. So he didn't move anyway. And then she said, where you are seated, I see Shirdi Sai Baba. She was a clairvoyant, but she was not a Sai devotee. Mm-hmm. And she said, I see Shirdi Baba where you are seated. So my father was finding this even stranger. And then she said, now Shirdi Baba has disappeared, and in his place I see Satya Sai Baba.
Mm-hmm.
Where you are. And so this is getting more and more intriguing. And then she says, Satya Sai Baba is telling me to tell you that to bring your entire family to Puttaparthi, especially your two sons, and their life will never be the same again.
Hmm.
He said, and their life will never be the same again. And my father was quite, surprised with all these happenings. And anyway, after the visit, he came home and he shared this incident with us. And the next day he went to work and he applied for a week's vacation leave. And then the same evening we caught a bus in Chennai and we came to Puttaparthi. And, we were all agog with excitement, saying that the Lord has called us and, you know, so He's going to give us a warm welcome and all that. But nothing of that nature happened. We just came, and like that was the year 74, and I was just 14, and there were hardly few lines in the darshan, about 5 lines was max. So anywhere you sit, whether you're on the 5th line or the 1st line, you will fall in Swami's physical sight. I mean, you don't have to be divine to look at the 5th line. Mm. But of course, as divine, He can see anything.
And He can also ignore anything.
That's right.
Trust me.
And you just, that's a beautiful segue, because that's exactly what He did.
Uh-huh.
So He would come all the way about 10, 12 feet away from us. He would stand there and give us a deep, penetrating look.
Uh-huh.
Every darshan. But then again, when He came closer, like He would look beside you, like He says, you know, I'm above you, below you, around you. So also when He chooses to, He can see above you, behind you, below you, but He won't look at you.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did have that opportunity, and that was our first experience. When He comes near, He would not look at us at all. But from 10 to 12 feet, He would just give us a deep, penetrating look. It's almost like you're under some X-ray scan, you're just being scanned. So this happened every darshan. And during that time, one of it happened to be my birthday, came on one of those days. So I just got up and said, Swami, today's my birthday. And He couldn't care less. Like, He just looked past me like I must have been a pillar or a post or something. He didn't find me interesting at all, and nothing happened. And my youthful ego was suitably crushed. So with that, I just sat down, and our vacation was coming to an end, and we were getting ready to leave. So there was this feeling that, hey, you called us, but you didn't even talk to us or anything. But then we realized that, you know, we had a wonderful time. The bhajans, the whole environment was very uplifting, very beautiful. And other than our own, mental appointment that we should be in some way welcomed with open arms and all that, which is more our own projection, there was no scope or reason to be unhappy, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And, then when, better sense prevailed, then we realized that, actually we had the time of our life here.
Yeah.
And then, true to His words, our life has
never been the same again. Mm. His words are prophetic, brother. Nothing. Every word is the voice of the Vedas that speaks it. So,
Yes, exactly.
Nothing can be the same if you say so. Now, how did you two get together? I mean, you have two separate parallel stories, and you came in 72, 74 with your own respective families. Obviously, you didn't know each other then. You were teenagers. How did you both get together? Did Swami have a role to play in that?
Yes. Yeah, of course. Swami used to give us interviews when we were in teenage. Until
by then your family was in that mode that you were getting called.
Yeah. But I think we were in our teens, and I applied for all, 18, 19 year olds, and both of my sisters were trying to get into medical school. My brother was preparing for engineering, and I was already in my bachelor's. Swami started to tell my parents that, that he'll perform my wedding, and he wanted them to look for a suitable groom. And they were trying their best. And my mother said, Swami, my husband is very much involved in the Sai organizational work, and he doesn't have time to look for boys. And Swami said, when you do my work, I'll do your work. But it is your dharma. You have given birth to these children, so you have to go and look around. My blessings are always with you, Bangaru, he said. So they were looking for a suitable groom. And it was around that time Bhagwan had called all four of us for an interview. And he said, remember that God is your best friend. As long as your father is in a position and he has money in his pocket, you have so many people to greet you and cheer you. Once all of this is gone, no one will be around you to say goodbye. It is only divine that will be with you. Don't go after this friend and that friend. Focus on your education. Your parents have given you so much of independence and freedom, and they've trusted you. So get a good name to yourself, to your parents, and to Swami. Work hard, he said. And until then, he also gave an example. He said, nowadays, look at all these medical colleges and professional engineering colleges, how they are operating. Students go, and when they graduate and come, they're coming in pairs. Girls and boys, and you don't need to do all of this. Everything will happen on its own, he said. And the sternness and the seriousness in his tone, it was different. Until then, he was like a mother. But now the seriousness...
Swami is very particular about his discipline of co-ed and, mixing and socializing.
Yeah. So those words
I've heard it from so many guests who have sat in this chair. Mm-hmm. When you're a Vidyarthi, don't be a Vishyarthi.
Yes. He said, you have to focus on Vidya or education when you go to the school as Vidyarthi or a student. So those words of Bhagavan galvanized our hearts and minds and kept us only focused on our studies. And he said, if you think you can do whatever you want, you're wrong. I know everything. I know everything, he said.
Were you guys scared, you and your siblings?
Oh, we were. We were scared. So.
And you know, when Swami turns serious, it can be quite scary.
Yeah.
His expression, his voice, his tone.
Yes. Until then, we were experiencing that motherly love from him.
Suddenly
now he's all changed.
He's
like a strict teacher, a stern father. So, with his divine grace, my sisters got into medical school. My brother got into engineering. I was planning on going for master's, but Swami was asking my parents to find a groom as soon as possible. So, and two more years continued, and I finished my master's. Then, somehow, I thought of applying for MPhil. I knew that if I come to Anantapur, Swami would not allow me to study because he was asking me to get married. And so I applied in Pondicherry, in Arvind Ashram. And my parents were not aware of this. No one knew other than me. So I received the application from them, from the university. And it was in the process. And by then my parents were like kind of exhausted or fed up. Looking for
groom searching.
Right grooms. Yeah.
It's a very tough job.
Yes, and then also we wanted spiritually oriented people, especially Sai devotees.
Okay.
Yeah. So finally they found, after going through the filtration, they found two matches, and then they came to me and said, we are going to see Swami, he's in Vrindavan. So if he agrees to any one of these boys, we are going to go ahead and you're not going to say no. So I kept saying, let's wait. I kept saying. So they said, no, we are going tonight. So it's too late. And again, when your father goes to talk to Swami about various medical camps and other things, the first thing he would ask us is about the group. So we bought the tickets. So we went to Vrindavan. Bhagwan was there at that time. And somehow, I think there were some issues with the bus. So instead of reaching within 10-12 hours, we took like 22 hours to reach Vrindavan.
Wow, what a long journey.
Next day Swami comes to us and he says, oh, people from America and Argentina are coming faster than you guys, he said. So what happened, he said. And then he said, you rest, I'll call you tomorrow, he said. Uh-huh. So the next morning he called us and we were in the outer interview room and he looked at me, he said, come inside. And then he turned to my parents and said, I want to speak to her one-on-one, he said. So he called me inside. So I was with Bhagwan in the inner interview room and I held on to his feet. I didn't even give him any chance to say anything. I kept crying. I said, Swami, I don't want to get married. I don't want to get married, Swami, please. I kept crying. And all his those, the robe ends were all wet. And then his feet were wet. He said, why are you crying? You and your sister are like my eyes. Yeah, two eyes. I don't want you to cry. It will hurt me, he said. And as you're aware, Swami tells this to all his devotees. We are all the apple of his eye, right? So he said, don't worry. Don't cry. I'm here. You have come to me. I'm your mother. Talk to me, he said. Swami, no, I don't want to get married, Swami. So what happened with those two grooms that your parents brought, the pictures and everything? I said, Swami, I don't know. I feel that they are business-minded families, Swami. So he said, if you don't like it, Bangaru, I'll never go ahead. I won't force you. But you have applied to go to Aravind Ashram. See, you have not told anybody, but Swami knows. And you don't want to get married. Sannyas ashram is not good for you. You must get married. I'll find a suitable groom who's in the same path as you. Will you be happy then? Will you get married? I'll give you a Mangal Sutra. I'll give you a necklace. He's kind of like bribing me. He's preparing me, cajoling me, caressing me. He said, will you like it? I'll do it in Puttaparthi. I'll take care of everything. Will you be okay with it? You cannot stay single, he said. I said, okay, Swami, if you say so, I'm fine, I said. Then he said, okay, then let's go outside and talk to your parents. Then when we came outside, Swami looked at my parents and he said, both of you are not aware what she's thinking. And she had applied to the ashram. She wants to go there and do her MPhil. You are not aware of it, but Swami knows. So by then something has happened. Some transformation came in my parents. They said, Swami, we are tired. We cannot look anymore. Swami, please, you find a suitable groom and get her married, Swami. They just fell at his feet. And Swami said, some of those grooms that you looked in the past, they were all business-minded. You couldn't realize that, he said. Mm-hmm. So he said, I'll give you a call. I'll send a telegram. Bring your daughter and come to Puttaparthi and see me. We'll talk in depth, he said. So later on, after we got married, my husband Shyam told me that when Swami had called us inside Thrayi Vrindavan, actually he was in Sevadal duty wearing a badge outside Bhagavan's room. Oh. I was not aware of it at all.
Did you ever see her, brother, that time? Yeah. Did you see a young lady go inside?
I saw, Professor Anandkumar is well known, so I saw him and his family going in. I didn't pay too much attention to who else is going in, but I knew that he was coming with his family there, and that is all I knew.
Yeah, because Sevadil is not supposed to be looking anywhere
I
was just testing you.
No, he's a well-known figure, so
course,
as soon as he came,
course.
We knew that, but that's about all. After that, I didn't pay attention.
Oh, I see. Yeah. My God, what a coincidence. He didn't look too far. Look at Swami, so clever. suitable. He just looked around, who's suitable around my building today? There is a young seva dal, so he picked him. Look at him, it's
so clever. He never introduced him to us or us to him.
So did you get that call later from Swami to come?
Yeah, we did.
After how much time?
I think we were in Vrindavan in June, but my father came to Puttaparthi to attend a conference. Mm-hmm. Swami keeps that, suspense. So my father was here attending a conference, Sevadal conference or something like that. And then he'll tell you the rest of the story.
Okay.
Would you like to go ahead?
She mentioned, around that time, actually, after they left and they went back, when they came in.
Swami, you were Sevadal from which state?
I was in Karnataka at that time,
okay.
Bangalore.
Okay.
Earlier I joined Sevadal in Chennai, and that's a story in itself. But for now, for this purpose, by that time I had moved to Karnataka, Bangalore on my job. And then I joined Sevadal there. And then that particular evening when they had arrived, after they had gone in, Swami actually came out and he said, "Your wife is here." Now, this is an ongoing joke between Swami and me, because for several years he would always come to me suddenly and say, "Hey, there is a girl sitting in the lady side there, that's your wife there." But since I knew that Swami is joking and all, I didn't pay any attention to that. I just took it as an opportunity for Swami to talk to me, and I took that's all as a blessing, because probably my age was not such a thing that he would talk about Atma and Paramatma and all that stuff. So something more, suitable or appropriate at that age, he was just mentioning. So it would go on for many years. But that particular time when he came, he was quite serious. There was a serious look in his eye. It was not the mischievous glint of, in his eye. It was a very serious look. So I didn't know what to make of it, but like, I thought it's best to keep silent and not say anything. So I just folded my hands and just did namaskar to Swami. So that was the time. And then later on, when Swami actually, he called them to Puttaparthi, he sent a telegram to her parents to bring her and come to Puttaparthi. And one of my Sai brothers here, who's in Sevadal even now in Bangalore, and he's in Puttaparthi as well, Sai Manohar, Swami asked him to tell me to bring my parents on the same day, on a particular day, and it turned out to be the same day. I didn't know that they were being called at the same time. He just independently asked me to call my parents and come. And on that day we had a conference in Bangalore, Sevadal conference. So after the Sevadal conference was over, we all came to Puttaparthi anyhow. And Swami, it was 11 o'clock in the morning darshan, bhajans, interviews, everything is over. And only Swami was on the veranda of the mandir. And maybe one or two Sevadal of Prashanthi Nilayam were there. And then we came as a group in the Sevadal, and we got Padanamaskaram from Swami. After that, Swami sent away everybody. And what I found was my parents were there, Professor Anil Kumar and his family were there, and that was all. And then Swami invited us to an interview at that time. So he called us in, and then he said that, if it is... if both of the families think it appropriate, then it may be okay if you'll go ahead with the marriage alliance between the two families and all that. And he says it's up to you, really. And actually, I just prior to this, a few months ago, what happened was, on one occasion, only I was called for an interview, and at the same time, Professor Anil Kumar was also called for an interview. We were there in the outer interview room, and then in the inner interview room, Swami called both of us in. And I found that a bit strange, because only family was being called inside. So I thought maybe he's alone and I'm alone, and so Swami was optimizing his time or something.
You didn't know that you were bonding with your future father-in-law?
Then, Swami actually, then he introduced, then he asked me, "Do you know him?" I said, "Yes, Swami is Professor Anil Kumar."
Everybody knows him.
That. Oh, do you know, he was, at that time he was the Andhra Pradesh state president. So he said he's Mana Satya Sai Samasthaliki president. He said like that in Telugu. And then he said, he introduced me to Professor Anil Kumar, and then he said, "Oh, when I went to Chennai, he served me because in the mandir we had served Swami when Swami came with his students and staff inside Sundaram. I had the opportunity to serve Swami." He said he served me food. He said so. And then, just as a side note, there to me, and that has always remained an amazing thing. Swami really does not care about any other accomplishment or anything. He just looks for what small act of service of selflessness you have ever done.
So he didn't talk about your professional
Nothing.
Qualifications?
Yeah.
Or
no, later on he told, after that he told he works in the Hindustan Aeronautics Limited in Bangalore, and he said, Vimana factory lo ikade panchestadu, like that. He told all of that. But his first way of introduction was, he served me.
See how high it is on the list.
Yes. It is not even that you studied in a premier institution like IIT or in, nothing of that matters to Swami. The fact is you served the Lord. That is all. That is the highest qualification anybody can ever have. So that happened a few months earlier, and then this happened now, and then suddenly we found ourselves in the same room, and then he said, you are the girl is here and the boy is here and parents are here, so if you all think it appropriate, then we can settle this alliance here, or if it's not convenient, that's also fine with me, he said. So he gave a full freedom. Then both parents, both sides, they said, no, Swami, whatever you will. And then we also said, Swami, in a chorus, you know, whatever you will, Swami. Oh, in that case, we'll settle the date for 10 days down the road. He set the date, and he said, we'll have it here in Puttaparthi. And he said that, we'll just invite 30 people, because this entry room can't take more than 30. And then slowly I said, Swami, I was also in Sevadal in Sundaram, and a lot of those brothers would love to come and see you. They may not even care about the wedding, but they'll get to have your darshan. That's all their interest, Swami. Then he said, no, but you move to Vrindavan now, why all of this? Then I said, no, Swami, it's a lifetime event and they will like to be near you, Swami. He said, okay. So then Vrindavan Sevadal people, then from Chennai, everybody, and then of course from her father's, long association with the Andhra organization. So finally what happened was, from 30 people in the interview room, it became over close to 1,000 in the Kalyan Mandapam.
Oh, wow. That was a big wedding.
Yeah. So it became a big wedding. And then many walk-ins also, the people walked in when they saw Swami is coming there, they invited themselves and they came in. So that also happened, but it became a big wedding in the mandir there. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Sajni, you want to add something?
Yeah, when he first introduced our families to each other, he just held my hand. And I was 22. I just finished my master's degree. He said, hold my hand and walk with me in the veranda, he said. He said, have confidence, Bangaru. You've done your master's degree. Why are you always timid? Just stand straight and have confidence. I'm with you. And then he held my hand and he walked me.
Oh, unheard of. A young girl in the veranda walking.
Yeah, so, yes. Oh. And then he said, I'll show you the boy. I want you to take a look at him. And then I saw him from the back and I thought, oh, he's looking like a student, college student, you know. He's wearing whites and everything. So then, Swami knew my thoughts. Uh-huh. And I always, because I'm short, I always wanted to marry a tall guy.
Uh-huh.
Swami looks at me, he says, Bangaru, you are thinking he's short. He's like a student. You are not too tall.
Reality check, quick one.
And then, I want you to take a look at him. It's okay, you can see, he said. It's okay, Swami, I said. Then he took me inside the room. And then...
So you only saw the back...
That's it,
His hairline was okay at the back, well combed here in the back of his collar.
I didn't pay attention to that. So we both sat at his feet. And then Swami kept on asking Shyam, Chudara, look at her. Look at her. You can look at her now. Before marriage, all our mothers and sisters. Now she's going to become your wife. You can look at her. No, Swami, if you have looked at her, if you have okayed her, I don't need to look at her, he said.
So even in the interview room,
no,
did you check each other out?
He didn't look at me at all. And when Swami said, you look at him, you take a look at him, again he said, when he repeated a couple of times, then I briefly looked at him, that's all. So,
quite a leap of faith.
No, actually, talking of faith, Swami taught me early about faith. And this is a very, very dear incident in my life. And, I never tire of sharing this because it has had such a deep impact on me. When I was in the Sevadal in Madras, Swami was on a visit to Madras, and then one afternoon...
Around
1983.
83, okay.
Yeah. And then on that visit, we were It was afternoon around 3-ish, and me and other Sevadal brothers, we were preparing the grounds in front of Sundaram for Swami's darshan in the evening because lots of devotees will come, and there were sands and it was concrete, so we are, you know, evening out the sand and also sprinkling water to keep it cool because it's pretty hot there even in January.
I know.
A pretty hot place.
I was there for that darshan, brother, by chance.
Yes.
By the way,
yes,
83 Swami's visit.
Yes.
I was in Sundaram.
Wonderful. So, and then that year what happened was, that afternoon suddenly we heard a very musical voice from the top, and immediately we all knew it was Swami. And so we looked up and Swami had come to the upstairs balcony.
Balcony, yeah.
And then on the ground floor outside was the great Vedic scholar Kuppa Bairagi Shastri. And he was there and Swami was talking to him from there. So it was a, you know, conversation across two floors. So Swami was talking from the balcony and he was replying. And we were just enjoying this conversation. And suddenly Swami looked at me and said, Paikira, meaning come up. So I started making my way towards the door of the Sundaram so that I could go upstairs. Then as Swami saw me going there, Swami said, Paikira. He said, come again. He said, come up. Then again I said, yeah, I thought I'm going there only. So I started going. He said, Paikira. And then he looked. Then I understood, oh. Then on that time there was a decoration of garlands hanging from the upper floor to a little bit near the ground floor level. So I thought, oh, he wants me to cast these garlands and come up. They are hanging vertically. So I tried to jump and cast the garland, but I was not able to reach it. So I thought, okay, I must get myself a stool or a small chair or something so that I can catch it. And just as that thought came, then Swami said, Vadile. He said, no need. And then he said a very, very profound thing. He said, in Telugu, and I first say it in Telugu and then in English, he said, Swami chapte mala weight tiskuntundi. If Swami says so, the mala or the garland will take your weight. So he tested my faith at that time. And then I understood that Swami's word is so profound.
And powerful.
Powerful. It is instantaneously it takes place. Whatever he wills will happen.
Even if you caught a twig, you would have managed to
absolutely.
Reach.
So what he meant was, don't look at the physical dimensions of that flower garland and see, can it take my weight of so many kilos or whatever. When I say so, it will happen.
So then I guess.
So that was the touch of faith. And so it is not too much of an extension that when he has selected a person to be my wife, I should worry about whether she is suitable to me or not, and how is she and nothing. I have full implicit faith that he will take care of all that. So I didn't even have to look at anything. I didn't have to bother anything.
I see.
So,
Sister Sarojini, when you got married, did Swami give you any advice, or to both of you for that matter, about marriage or how to make a marriage work?
Yes, actually, in a way he did. And our understanding was, see, usually there is this lot of this, tussle between so-called whether the wife has the upper hand or the husband has the upper hand in a family and who has the last word and all this unnecessary nonsense. But actually, when we keep God as the primary and we go by what He has said, then everything becomes very smooth. Okay. There's no more ego clashes, there's no more my way or the highway type of thinking, there's nothing like that. So first thing is, give God primacy in a marriage. It is not, and then seek to understand each other. Swami said, first understand, then adjust. He said, because everybody will have a different perspective, so it is natural, everybody's upbringing or from where they have come or the journey that they have traveled thus far, even though they may be devoted and all, could be different. So first understand each other, and then adjustment is automatic. If you try to adjust without understanding, at some point you may feel, oh, only I am adjusting, only I am giving in, I am compromising. But it's not like that. You can always have a different viewpoint, and if you see it as each viewpoint is adding to the fullness of the understanding of a situation, then there is no need to have a, you know, discrepancy in our lines of thinking or not. So he said those things, and
Swami looked at us and he said, she wants to have a TV in her home. She wants to watch all the shows.
About you?
Yeah. And then he said, what is there in all the shows, Bangaru? You don't need to worry about it too much. He said, you're going to be in Bangalore, and I do not want you to have the social life and connections a lot, because once you go, they come, and then they go, and then you go, and things like that will happen, and it will build expectations, and it will lead to heartache and disappointments, he said. I was 22. I did not understand the meaning of expectations, heartache, and things like that. I just heard it from him. It made sense almost 2 decades later. And then he said, everything is in this hand. He stretched his hand. He said, what do you want? I can give you anything. Then we both said, Swami, we want to be near and dear to you. He said, what do you mean by near? We said, Swami, to be in your proximity. Then he said, what do you mean by dear? I said, Swami, to please you at all times. And then he gave a beautiful analogy. He said, there is a lake. In that lake, you see those beautiful lotuses. And under those lotuses, there are frogs. But those honeybees that come from far off places to absorb the nectar and appreciate its splendor, whereas the frogs are unable to appreciate its beauty. So when you are dear to God, you are automatically near to me, he said.
Yeah, in fact, he said that dearness is the true nearness.
Very profound. Mm-hmm. May I ask, in your experience, was it easier to, because it was a totally arranged marriage, like mm-hmm. a blind date, no chance to get to know each other. Yeah. You just took the plunge because yeah. of your mm-hmm. faith in Swami. Mm-hmm. So both of you having that faith in Swami and coming from two families of Sai devotees, did that make it easier for the marriage to work?
I think initially it was not that easy. It took a while for us to kind of get to know each other and understand. But like in any other arranged marriage, right? But our common link is Bhagawan. Our interest is Swami. So life revolved around him. So he was there to kind of like bring both of us together in our thoughts, words, and decisions and everything. So Swami played an important role. He was always there. And we had a little bit of, you know, differences because of our backgrounds. And I come from I grew up with cousins and friends, and we're very social. But he was trained by Swami from age 14, so he was silent. He was not talking much, and I was kind of like lost. And when Swami told us not to have any social life, it was hard for me initially. But then slowly we came out of that, and then, you know, and we would just run to Puttaparthi, or when Swami comes to Vrindavan, we are at his feet. And then he would talk to us and guide us, and slowly things started to fall in place. Mm-hmm.
So in this regard, I'd like to hear from you. Knowing what you knew and the way Swami had advised you and the way both of you had been groomed in your own respective different family backgrounds by Swami, mm-hmm. how did you, while working out this marriage, how did you deal with the issues of difference of opinion, whether it's about finances or parenting or dealing with each other's relatives or extended family? There's always some dynamics going on in almost everyone's life.
Yeah, if I may, about finances, Swami actually told her, you better take care of the finances, because this fellow, he doesn't give value to money. He just spends it, so he doesn't value it at all. So he doesn't care about it. So you need to keep a closer watch on the finances. So he gave her that role, because the nature was exactly what Swami said. So even today,
that's the chief financial officer
yeah.
so, of the family.
Yeah, and then about the parenting aspect.
As soon as we got married, Swami, until then he was saying, you must get married, and he performed the wedding and everything. The very next day he started telling me to have a boy. He said, you must get a boy, you must get a son. And then I was planning on working, and then or continue my MPhil or something like that. Swami said, you look after the home, look after your family's well-being, and you must get a son, you must get a boy. And he kept, saying this for a very long time. And in Vrindavan one time, I sat with a group of ladies, and two women were in the front line. They were holding on to some letters. Swami walked past them, and they kept saying, "Swami, please accept our children, forgive them, forgive their mistakes, Swami. Please let them continue to study in the school, Swami. Please, please don't remove them from the school." And they were crying and sobbing and everything. Swami just looked at them, and he said, pigs are giving birth to children, and human beings, manushulu, you are also giving birth to children. There should be a difference between the animals and us humans. They have done those mistakes many times. How can I help? What can I do? He said, and he just walked away. And later on I came to know that those ladies were the mothers of the boys that went away from the college campus and went to the city and did what, you know, they wanted to do, some negative stuff. And then they repeated the same thing many times, and they were warned, and then they didn't care for that. And it really, you know, impacted the other students. It was not a good thing. So they were asked to leave the campus. So these mothers were crying. And Swami just said, "What can I do?" As mothers, he included, he said, "As mothers, it's your primary dharma or duty to look after your child's well-being, give them values. That's what you need to do," he said. And it so happened that the very next day, he visited my parents' home in Vrindavan, and we were there. He took us inside the bedroom and he spoke to us for 45 minutes. He said, first thing he said, "You're arguing with your husband. You should be quiet and listen to him. Stop arguing," he said. Then he said, "I'll give you a son, but will you know how to take care of him? You must know how to take care of your children, even before you give birth to your son," he said. And then he gave an example from Mahabharata. He said, Dhritarashtra was blinded by attachment and love towards his son and never corrected him. And Gandhari, she was blindfolded. She covered her eyes. And the children were unable to receive the mother's love from their from her eyes. You see, you should be available to your children. And mother's love, mother's attention is very important for their children, for the children, he said. So that was very strong for me, listening from him.
And very solid advice.
Yeah.
Yes, and also he said that if the sons go off the track, it's the father who's responsible for that. If the daughters similarly do so, it's the mother who's to be held responsible. So he was very clear about our roles as well. And, you know, so that's how we got our first lessons in parenting from Swami directly.
Such vital lessons.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And he taught us to spend quality time despite our schedules and everything. We must have time for our children. That communication and dialogue has to be open.
Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam. Thanks to the overwhelming response to Radio Sai's Karoke Sai Bhajans, released in July 2017. Here comes the second offering, a set of 9 bhajans. We also have the Sarvadharma Prayer, the Asutoma Sardamaya Hymn, as well as the Mangala Arati. And like before, you can download them from our website, radiosai.org. Please feel free to visit our website and use them in your Sai centers, in your Sai Bhajan sessions, and in your home to practice Sai Bhajans, to make every Sai Bhajan session an elevating and supremely fulfilling experience. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.